Jamie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. We're talking all things eco and removing toxins and all of that stuff that I love talking about. And I very rarely do it these days. So a big welcome to Anna Turns. Thank you so much for joining me, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to chat to you. I love your book, Go Toxic Free, Easy and Sustainable Ways to Reduce Chemical Pollution. For me, this feels like it's all come full circle because you may or may not know that I wrote my first book, goodness me, 16 years ago. I was so ahead of my time, which was all about sort of holistic living with, a lot of stuff to do with being chemical free. And it's just been amazing for me to see how things have changed over the years. And I love the fact that you've really, really dug deep into this topic. Before we get really dig into it, just tell us a little bit about your work and your background and what kind of got you into all of this.
So I'm an environmental journalist and I live in South Devon. I write for lots of different publications, often with a solutions focus on quite tricky subjects. So I'm often talking about things like the climate crisis or marine issues and things, but looking at the progress and innovation and the really inspiring change makers who are doing amazing things to improve things. And a few years ago, I ran a campaign with my daughter called Plastic Clever Solcom as part of Kids Against Plastic. And it was all about reducing single-use plastic in the town and stopping it ending up on the beaches. And it was really, really successful. But it really got me thinking that plastic is so tangible and visible. And yet we weren't really thinking about what was in those bottles or what was inside the things we were buying or what that plastic was made of. And so I've kind of been down lots and lots of different rabbit holes, really, investigating what we can do to reduce our chemical footprints.
Yeah.
And how we can feel, how we can be more empowered as conscious consumers, really. So it is a very positive book, but it's based on science. It's not a kind of, I think we should just do this. It's very much kind of looking at the latest science research and I've spoken to people from all around the world about things that they're doing. And I've really sort of realized that we need to join the dots, basically. When we buy something, we need to think about how was it made? How was it produced? How has it got to us? And what's going to happen once we dispose of it? Is it going to biodegrade or is it going to stay around forever?
Yeah.
So really it's just kind of having that, like you say, like having that holistic perspective on it rather than just thinking about at this moment in time, I need this item, thinking, what are the ramifications of that on us as humans, but also on the wider environment, on wildlife and future generations as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you know, we got straight into that because that was always, you know, when I was doing more of this work than I am now, that was the thing that would actually probably annoy me most. I think I probably got, best known for looking at sort of natural skincare and beauty products, but also, you know, washing your home with cleaning your laundry, you know, doing your laundry and looking after your home without, as many toxins. So that was the stuff I was writing about. But to sort of echo the point you've just made, I remember there were several occasions when people would ask me whether I would like to review or look at some new product or whatever because it was natural in inverted commas, which of course we'll get into that. We know the word doesn't actually mean very much, but we'll get into that. A brand would say, oh, we'd love you to accept some of our product and we'd love you to write about this. And, you know, it's completely natural. It's this, it's that. And you'd skim over these lovely words they used. And I remember just to quote one, you know, without naming any names, I was sent a laundry detergent.
Yeah.
And it was all allegedly fabulously natural and eco and holistic and this, that and the other and all these amazing words that were attached to it. It was absolute nonsense. I mean, the only thing that they had actually done was put the product inside a recyclable cardboard box. I mean, that was it, you know, and I think possibly the plastic was allegedly some levels down on its possibility of biodegrading in less than 1,000 years or something ridiculous. But it was still full of exactly the same crap that I wouldn't put anywhere near my clothing. and that is ultimately going to be washed down and kill the fish. You know, let's not put too fine a point on it. So there is no way I could review a product like that and try and it, as far as I'm concerned, it didn't tick anything. And I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, you know, and you will have really dug deep into this, but there is this massive greenwashing thing that goes on, trying to convince people that they're being eco and green when they're absolutely not. That, you know, perhaps the outer packaging, you know, will biodegrade in less time, but what's in it is still terrible.
I know. I mean, greenwashing is literally my pet hate. There's so much of it, and it's all, we kind of succumb to these marketing ploys, or the pictures on a product, or just false claims, or just vague claims. Maybe they're not even intending it to be greenwashed, but they're not really proving things or looking at what they're trying to say. And I mean, even the word sustainable doesn't really mean anything. There's no specific definition of it. So like you say, saying something's natural, often you'll see products with inspired by nature or biodegradable ingredients, and you think, well, it's fine if you've got one biodegradable ingredient, but if the whole product isn't biodegradable and you're flushing it down the loo or you're putting it down the sink, that's kind of defeats the point. So it is very much about looking at that, like you say, kind of peeling back those layers and looking at what companies are saying to us and calling for better transparency, like looking for the companies who are doing amazing things. There are some companies that are doing incredible things and working in a really ethical way as well, in terms of community and people, as well as the environment. And I just think we, as consumers, we have got a really strong voice to support those companies and those people and those businesses, and spend our money in a way that is going to have a positive knock-on effect rather than a less bad impact.
Yeah, absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
Now, in the book, you know, you say, a huge percentage, I think you say in the book, 62% of chemicals used in the EU are hazardous to human health and the environment. I mean, it's incredible, actually, isn't it? I used to talk about this a lot as well. The fact that, you know, we can't actually do the maths as to what it adds up to, because the numbers of different synthetic chemicals added to, let's say, for sake of argument, a bottle of shampoo or something or body wash or whatever it is, the number of different chemicals in that one bottle, not to mention the 45 other bottles you've got under your sink, it's the cumulative effect of all of those, isn't it, that no one can do the maths on that.
Absolutely. And often it's the fragrances as well that have got loads of ingredients in as well.
Yeah, I'm always shocked by that one, actually. That one always got to me. The fact that companies, I mean, I don't know if it's changed, because some of this stuff may have changed since I did my research, but it was always thus that a company could write fragrance or parfum or something on a bottle. Yeah. And one would assume, you know, one drop, two drops, but it could be up to, I don't know, something like 100 different synthetic bits of fragrance if they fancied it.
Exactly. And they don't have to say the specific chemical names. So I think something like with air fresheners, it's something like fewer than 10% of ingredients are usually disclosed to consumers on labels.
Wow.
It's not very many. And often they will claim that there isn't space on the label to do that, and it's not relevant to the consumer because they've been tested.
Wow.
One thing that I've really discovered in my research is this toxic cocktail effect.
So yes, exactly.
You're looking at all the things under your bathroom sink, for example.
Yeah.
Or in your bathroom cabinet. And yes, they have all been regulated and they're all fine, but they've all been tested on their own.
Exactly. Not when they're in conjunction with everything. It's exactly it.
Exactly. And yeah. If you're putting on a few different products in the morning and soaking to your skin, or flushing various things down the plug hole when you're having a shower, it's that thought that you've got multiplicity there. You've got those lots of different things happening. And same with foods in terms of pesticides. So pesticides might well be within all of the recommended limits, but on one particular piece of fruit, you might have 14 different pesticides. And you think, well, do you really want that? We're not really told that explicitly. So it's really about, it's not about going completely toxic free. That's kind of basically impossible.
Yeah.
But it's about streamlining the things that you've got in your home, and less is more, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having fewer items and putting fewer versions of things on yourself, and wasting less as well. I mean, it will save you money. help the environment in terms of reducing waste as well. So it's a win-win, really.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this comes back to going a bit, you know, simplifying and going a bit old style, really, doesn't it? Because, you know, in days gone by, we wouldn't have had anything like the same number of chemicals. I mean, you know, I often say, you know, yes, my mum or my grandma might have had a pot of cold cream, but that would probably have been about it. Wouldn't have had, you know, 50 different things.
Exactly.
And similarly with food, you know, they'd have eaten seasonally, wouldn't they?
Exactly. And in terms of cleaning products, for example, you look at the aisles of a supermarket.
Yeah.
And always, I mean, I don't usually go down that aisle because it stresses me out.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at the number of different types of bathroom cleaner or types of bleach, and you just think there is something for every single possible use in your home.
Yeah.
And you really don't need them all. People see them and they take up such a huge volume on the shelf that people probably think, oh, everyone else is buying this, I should buy this. And actually, we don't need it. We can, I mean, I clean my home with bicarbonate of soda, a spray of vinegar with lemon juice in it, couple of really nice eco products that are just really simple, but I don't have lots and lots of different versions of things.
Absolutely.
I also don't go for things like bleach because we just don't need to disinfect our homes.
We don't
need it to be sterile. It's not a sterile environment.
I remember once having the luxury of moving into a house that had just had a brand new bathroom fitted. And so the toilet actually still had a seal over it. It was literally brand new. So this is the first time I'd ever experienced this, I think. So I took this seal off and it actually said, do not put bleach in this toilet. I mean, it actually said that. It's like, who knew? Right? Yeah. Oh, my God.
But on the back of the label, it's got a picture of a dead fish.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. I love the way all of these products, when you actually look at them, they've got that kind of sign on that basically says, if you ingest this accidentally, call the goddamn cavalry straight away, you know. So, yeah. And on that note, I mean, just anyone might be listening thinking, I don't understand, what is the problem? You know, can we just sort of run through quickly what the issues are when we're, you know, ingesting and inhaling these cocktails of chemicals? I mean, we know that there's lots more, you know, there are lots more kind of respiratory issues that people face, headaches, insomnia. I'm guessing you could go on.
Yeah, there's lots of different things, and often they're quite chronic long-term impacts. So some of these chemicals are called endocrine disrupting chemicals, so they can affect our hormone systems, basically. So they can affect our fertility, our thyroid function. Some can affect our brain development and might be associated with things like ADHD, for example, or Parkinson's. Some are carcinogenic and still used in products. It's very difficult because it's not necessarily that you will use one product and the next day you will feel poorly. It's not like food poisoning and really acute. It's much more subtle than that. And so the scientists have been looking at population trends over time and seen that if people are exposed to certain things, it will make them more likely to experience certain types of cancer. So it's a bit like the smoking and the lung cancer link. Having one cigarette is not going to give you lung cancer, but smoking for a long period of time is going to make you much at much greater risk of suffering from lung cancer. If that makes
sense. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the issues with this, you know, I certainly found it, you know, with when I wrote my book all those years ago and over the years, and I'm sure you are getting it with your book, if you see what I mean. And that is, you know, it's fantastic that you've gone into all of these areas, but it's very easy for people to feel completely overwhelmed and sort of end up doing nothing, isn't it? So I like the way that you've kind of chunked it down and tried to make it a bit more manageable as to what we can actually do.
And I think that's such a good important point, because sometimes it can seem overwhelming if you look at everything all at once.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be as simple as dipping into the book and looking at one small part of one chapter and thinking about what is in one particular cupboard, for example, or what might be in the garden shed and what you might spray on the plants, or like one aspect. And actually, if you can make something really simple, you're much more likely to keep it going for a longer period of time and to just embed it into your home and into your daily routine. So it's very much about empowering people to know what questions to ask and to have really simple switches, really simple behavior changes that can be easy to stick to. So yeah, it doesn't have to be really complicated. And although I've spoken to hundreds of scientists around the world to kind of find out all this information, I hope I have translated it in a really accessible way so that actually people don't necessarily have to read scientific papers and kind of really understand all of those things. This is kind of the summary of my findings.
Yeah.
So it's hopefully really digestible and really useful. So things as simple as house dust, for example, one scientist I interviewed called it the soil of our indoor environment. So it's a kind of picture of what's going on in your home, because volatile chemicals end up in it and lots of things that come out of the furniture, for example, and that might have been sprayed in the home end up in the house dust. And one thing they told me was that one of the most important things to do is not necessarily get obsessive about dusting, which I certainly am not, but when you do dust, it's actually much more crucial to dust things like the electronics, things like the Wi-Fi router, the DVD player, the television, than say the windowsills, because the flame retardant chemicals inside the electronics will be filtering out into the dust.
Wow.
And that then ends up on the floor and your baby or your pet eats it or whatever. It's kind of the simplest thing is to just wipe it off with a damp cloth, not with polish and not with spray.
Yeah, exactly.
But just kind of thinking a little bit differently. So rather than just thinking, I'm going to make everything obsessively clean.
Yeah.
It's thinking, okay, what are the easy things I can do to make a big difference? Mm. And that's one of the things that I'm really conscious of now, that to be honest, I was one of those people that just kind of skim around the house really quickly and kind of probably miss that half the time. And now I really notice it a lot more, because I think actually that's going to have a bigger impact over a long period of time.
Mm. So dusting those areas with something like an e-cloth would do.
Yeah, just literally
microfiber cloth.
Damp cloth. It just with water or a vinegar lemon spray, something like that.
Mm.
But you don't need to be spraying loads of things. And there's a real association in our culture, I think, of clean things need to smell of lemon or pine or sea salt or something really kind of romantic,
except they've never actually seen any of those things, because clearly it's a synthetic version of
exactly. But also it's like actual like clean things should not smell.
No, exactly.
It should just be neutral. So because I haven't used kind of air fresheners and things in my home for quite a long time anyway, if I do go into a home that's got them in, I notice it's so
me too. It gives me an instant headache.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the awful experience of getting into a taxi or someone's car where they've got one of those hideous air fresheners? Oh my god, they're evil, aren't they? Absolutely evil. They make me feel instantly ill.
Yes.
Terrible. Oh my goodness. Okay, great. So that's a cool tip for the home then. Let's just look at food for a moment, because this, of course, is one big area that, you know, we wouldn't have time to cover it all, however long we spent chatting. But I guess, you know, you would agree that to start with, at least. I mean, of course, we need to look at what's on labels, but even better, try and eat as much as we can that doesn't even have a label, right? Go for no label foods on account of they're likely to be proper food rather than manufactured load of old nonsense.
Yes, exactly. Like whole foods, less processed things, and seasonal local produce. So if you're eating something seasonal, it's probably, there's more of it. They will have needed to use fewer chemicals on it. It might have traveled a shorter distance. Like all the kind of embodied emissions and impact in that will be less.
Yeah.
Because actually it's all of those hidden pesticides and agricultural chemicals that have been used that end up in us. Some of them are very, very hard to avoid, and I definitely don't avoid them all, but I have changed how I buy food slightly. So things that my kids will eat loads of in their packed lunch, for example, if it's available in the shop as organic, then I will buy it organic. I don't buy everything.
Well, it's too expensive, isn't it? It really is for everyone. Yeah. Just, you know, this is one of the problems with some of this stuff. What I found, you know, when I was doing a lot of this is I had to make it sort of swings and roundabouts. I had to spend quite a lot more money on some things, but way less on others. Because as you say, you don't even need to go down that aisle in the supermarket for, you know, because sometimes I used to go in the old days, I'd go to a supermarket and I've spent 50 quid and I've got nothing to eat. You know, it's just that load of old nonsense. So actually it's freed me up no end, you know, from not having to do that. But you know, you're right to say, look for the organic where you can. But what would you say are the things that we should really try and get organic if we can?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now, but did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut, protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, the things that I buy organic are things that the children eat more of, and also, so the things with fewer pesticide residues tend to be the ones with removable skins and husks and things, so things like onions and sweet corn, so they're less of a worry. Some things like the strawberries, spinach, kale, nectarines, they can have a higher level of pesticide residue on them. It changes every year, and there are really good resources on the Environmental Working Group website.
They do the kind of dirty dozen, don't
and
they?
Dirty dozen, exactly. And they test things every year. So it just gives you a little bit of an idea. I mean, I wouldn't literally print it out and go around the supermarket with the list, but I'd have it at the back of your mind and think about what you could do. And also, if you're going to buy strawberries out of season, they're probably going to have more pesticides on them because they had to have been manufactured and processed that in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Had greater input. It's just getting a balance, and it's making it manageable. And I mean, you mentioned expense. So much food gets wasted.
Oh, God,
so,
yeah.
I think
so true.
Less but better food and being really careful about planning meals and using what we've got and not wasting it, you might actually find you save money.
Yeah.
It's going to help the environment if we don't throw food away, because it's taken a lot of energy to create that in the first place.
Sure. What else would you add with regard to food? I mean, you know, say we could talk for hours about it, but what do you think are the really important things for people to consider?
I would think about how you're cooking. as well.
Yes.
So I would have make sure you've got an extractor on or a window open when you're cooking, because there are so many particulates and chemicals that are released during cooking. It depends on which kind of ovens you've got. For example, if you've got a gas or electric oven, for example, steaming veg might be healthier than roasting it in the oven in terms of kind of chemicals that end up in your home. Thinking not just about the actual food, thinking about the cookware that we're using.
I mean, that's a big one, isn't it? I mean, again, in all the years I've been doing this stuff, I've never really found the definitive. I'd love to know what you think. I mean, I've got my kind of cast iron pans. I've got a stainless steel pan. But, you know, sometimes if you just want to fry an egg, it's tough, isn't it? Because all the non-stick stuff is hideous.
There are some new ones, though. So there are. There's one called Queen Pan, which I think is a Belgian company.
Yes, I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's really good. I've got one of their pans, and it's a really nice one to cook with. And it's just basically made of silicone.
Right.
A sort of silicone lining. So the bad thing about most frying pans, the Teflon, is that they're made of PFAS chemicals, which are, they're known as forever chemicals. So they just don't biodegrade. They're very toxic to the environment and to the people in factories making these chemicals. And really, it's like the DDT of the future. It's not going to go away anytime quick. But also, those PFAS chemicals do appear in lots of other parts of the home as well. So they can be on our clothes in terms.
Have you seen their school uniforms? Like Teflon school uniforms. What is that about?
But that's often on the inside knee patches.
Oh my god.
Boys' trousers, not girls' trousers, boys' trousers, because they think they're reinforcing. And anything with claims that items are stain resistant, wrinkle resistant, easy iron, waterproof, anything like that, means that those type of chemicals have probably been added.
Yeah.
And it's just thinking about, is that really essential? Do those extra chemicals, are they justified?
Yeah.
And I would say no.
Of course.
You've got to think about what is the cost of this? What is the long-term impact of us using that fleetingly? And those chemicals, it's just really quite scary that they're in like wildlife, they're in our waterways, they're in the soil, they're in us. They're really hard to get rid of. Mm. It's just thinking about when you buy an item, what's going to happen when you get rid of it? And for example, like the pans, I wouldn't say chuck out all of your Teflon pans immediately. It's not like you're going to kind of get ill tomorrow, but next time you need to replace one.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you say, you've got your stainless steel, you've got your ceramic. They are quite expensive, but often you can find really brilliant used ones in charity shops as
Yes, good point.
They do last so long.
Yeah.
And also, how many pans do you need? Could you manage with one really good frying pan
and
a couple of good saucepans?
Well, most of us have got too much stuff generally, haven't we? I'm very guilty of that. But, you know, we open a cupboard and, oh, my God, we can't find anything because there's a million things we don't actually use.
Exactly. So actually having fewer things that are better for us and better for the environment will probably help declutter your home as well in the same.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then onto the skincare stuff then. Of course, you know, I've been doing this for years, but I'd love to know your take on it all. I mean, what I've found is that, you know, since I wrote my first book, the market has changed massively. I mean, literally 16 years ago, I think I was the only person talking about, I sometimes joke that, you know, I was writing about coconut oil before it had its own publicist, you know. but the market has massively changed. The range that is now available is incredible. But still, with that comes its own problems, because as we've already said, you know, it's become a huge market. The organic skincare market, for example, is now massive, whereas 16 years ago it wasn't. Now it is. But what that brings with it is its own challenges of, just like we were saying, with the words natural and pure don't mean anything. Often the word organic doesn't mean anything either.
Well, and clean beauty, that whole movement.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's such a massive marketing kind of greenwashing exercise.
Yeah, totally. And totally.
I just feel like as consumers, it's quite easy to be duped. And I would say simple is better. So I've actually just bought some some organic olive oil to put on my face instead of instead of any fancy thing, because it's, you know, you get those beautiful facial oils.
Yeah, I use lots of facial oils.
Yeah, they're lovely. But actually, olive oil has been working fine as well. So I've just been using some of that. And I just feel that people are jumping on the bandwagon, and it's very easy to get caught into these things. And I would just say there's a few things you can do to kind of keep an eye out for proof of all of these claims. And think about, often products will shout about what they don't have in them.
Yes, but not, they don't mention what they do.
Exactly. And I'm not saying they necessarily have bad stuff in them.
No.
But it's just having that integrity.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've got alarm bells going off in my head if I go around a kind of pharmacy or some of these shelves of products, because it might say free from nasties, for example.
It's like, yeah, well, exactly.
How do you define that nasty? And actually, they're probably really well regulated, and synthetic doesn't mean it's bad, and natural doesn't mean it's always good, because it can cause allergies and it might be, I don't know, not very sustainably sourced, for example.
Well, yeah, I mean, people, it is important to remember, isn't it, that people can be allergic to things, even if they are allegedly, in inverted commas, natural.
Totally. Mm. And actually, with synthetic things, they have been tested, and especially with cosmetics. I think I went into this with my research thinking, oh my gosh, cosmetics must be so tricky, such a tricky area, because there's so much fuss about it online, for example.
Yeah.
And actually, looking at the science, they're so well regulated, more well regulated than other things, I would say, in terms of, I don't know, things like the chemicals on our clothing, for example. And so I just think it's, our perception is quite skewed in this country. In other countries, it might not be the same, but generally Europe and the UK are fairly well regulated with these kind of things.
But again, we need a lot less in terms of skincare and beauty products than we think we do.
I know. I mean, I've got so much space in my bathroom and on my dressing table, because I really don't use very many things. And I mean, I've never used huge amounts of makeup, and I've never dyed my hair and things like that, but just got a couple of things like soap bars, shampoo bars, the oil, the face oil. I've not got a huge amount of things. And actually, I'm hoping that will translate to the kids as they grow a bit older as well. And they won't suddenly want to buy 20 different shower gels or fragrance products, because they've just never seen a bathroom full of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well done you. It is an issue though, isn't it, with kids? I mean, when my kids were younger, they used to kind of, I remember they used to go and kind of stay with friends, and then they come back and they go, I borrowed one of my friend's t-shirts, you know, one of his t-shirts. Oh, it smells really good. Can you wash my clothes in that? And I'm, oh my God, you know, they've used some hideous softener thing, you know, and it's such a problem when people, as you say, they equate the word fresh with stinking of something. Yes. It's an artificial fragrance.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, gosh. I know. Okay. So I could talk to you for hours. It's such a fascinating subject. Just let's chat about for a little bit about, you know, the topic that, of course, is, you know, always on the lips of the media and everybody else, which is this sort of the plastics and the war on plastics, as the expression goes. I mean, I suppose for me personally, it's one of the things that drives me most bonkers, because I really do feel that it's absolute lip service most of the time. You know, the whole concept of paying 5p for a crappy bag that's God knows how much energy it's taken to produce that. You know, it drives me insane. What's your take on it all?
I just think we live in such a disposable society, and I think we need such a massive systems shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
To just really valuing things and thinking about reusing stuff just as a matter of course, and not thinking I'm going to buy this and I'm going to chuck it in the bin when I walk to the end of the street because I finished using it. It's a massive change. And I think we need better regulation to make it essential that we do kind of limit our use of single use plastics, for example.
Yeah, definitely. But
also, don't you think that the emphasis at the moment is all about consumers doing the recycling and consumers reducing their waste at home. And actually, yeah, I think the responsibility should be on the designers and the manufacturers.
Yeah, totally.
They should not be allowed to create products that are not biodegradable at the end of their life, for example, or like thinking about that circular economy, thinking about how to cut that waste out of the cycle.
Yeah.
It's not our responsibility as consumers to change that whole system. It's got to come at the very, very beginning, at the design stage.
No, I agree. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, even just back on food for a minute, it never ceases to amaze me that, you know, you buy a avocado and it comes literally in a cardboard packaging with a goddamn plastic thing over it. It's an avocado. It's got its own coat on.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, you just do not need this stuff. It's very frustrating. And yet, meanwhile, as you say, we're all being bleated at, you know, and then, you know, this next problem is, you know, if we do recycle and we get our waste all nicely recycled into containers, the stuff's not picked up for 3 weeks. So it's all overflowing. So we have to stick it in the other bin, right? you can hear my frustrations, can't you?
Oh, I know. But it's the whole system is just wrong at the moment. And I think, as consumers, I think we do have power in terms of creating a loud fuss about this and writing to MPs, writing to retailers, writing.
What do we ask for then? What's a sort of straightforward thing to ask?
So there's something called the polluter pays principle, which is basically the fact that the manufacturer is responsible for the disposal of the end product. And that's starting to be taken more seriously with things like the introduction and potential introduction of the bottle the bottle return scheme.
So, that's something I hadn't heard of since, I don't know, when we used to talk about that when we were little kids.
Yeah, so when you finish with a plastic bottle and you pop it back in a machine, you receive your 5p back or whatever it is. In Europe, it's just kind of standard.
Is it really? I didn't know that. Wow.
Like Germany, yeah. They've really kind of switched on.
So you're not talking about the refillable stations then, the refilling stations, because they're starting to pop up for some things, aren't they?
Yeah, refillable is great as well. Absolutely. I mean, that is really, really good. But I do just think we need to find lots of different ways of eking out those single use chemicals, really. And even fashion. I mean, you think about the amount of clothes that people buy. Do we really need that many items? Is it better to buy fewer that will last longer, that will not impact the environment so badly?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just thinking about joining up those dots and thinking about the kind of bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just to finish, I mean, of course, the biggest bugbear right now, well, for me, is goddamn disposable masks. What is going on there? I mean, have you actually looked at how much of that stuff's ending up in the rivers and the seas?
Oh, I haven't looked at the stats, but I see it here in Devon. I see them in the estuary, and it's horrific. And I do think that COVID has put a lot of these issues on the back burner because everyone's been distracted.
Well, everyone's using everything made of goddamn plastic. I mean, everything from stupid screens to, you know, disposable masks to bloody hand sanitizer. You've got me started now. Hand sanitizer. Oh my God. If I see another one of those horrible bottles of hand sanitizer, you know, there is another way.
But even the lateral flow tests come with.
Oh, God, yes. I've forgotten about that. Oh, my God. Seriously, what will be going? How, you really ought to do a little audit of how much of this stuff is in landfill. How frightening is it?
There are some really good stats and reports about it from a charity in Bristol called City to Sea, and they have looked into this. And
I mean, that has to stop, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It really is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So anyways, the good news is your book is just fabulous, so in depth. You've really done the work. I can see it. And as I say, I love the fact that you've made it manageable, so you can just kind of open it up. As I'm talking to you, I opened it up and I just found toxic free bedroom tips. And so you talk about, you know, how to ventilate the space, choosing organic cotton bedding where possible, you know, letting things breathe before you, oh God, yeah, the whole mattress and the new furniture off-gassing thing. Yeah. and the decoration, don't decorate the nursery. Love it. So you've made it manageable. So yeah, it's fantastic book. Well done, you, Anna. You've done an amazing job.
Thank you.
So yeah, just remind us where we can find details of your work and your book.
So the book is available from the 20th of January online or in any bookshops. Lots of different online outlets are available. And my work is all at environmentaljournalist.co.uk. And you can see some of my writing and more information about the book on there.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Anna. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. It's been lovely.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.